You're listening to the training podcast from PursueGod.org, the official training channel for pastors, small group leaders, and disciple makers. Find more resources to help train your church at PursueGod.org/training.
Okay, Ross, today we're in week number 2 of our board member training series. Today we're going to focus in on the key responsibilities of a board member. And what we're going to do in today's episode is first we're going to talk about 3 different hats that board members wear. And Ross, when you first shared this with me and with our board, it was really helpful just to give some context to the different roles that a board member plays in the church. And then we're going to talk about 4 boundaries of a healthy board member. So we have a lot to cover today. And why don't we start with the first hat? This is kind of the most obvious hat of a board member. Let's talk about the governance hat that a board member wears.
Right. So a board member, these are either 3 roles or kind of boundaries that we say on in board member service. The governance hat, at different times we have these different roles, and different times we play it out in different ways. So sometimes the board member wears the governance hat, and that's when the members of the board are at board meetings or at official board functions. That's where we're trying to figure out God's voice, discern how God is leading the church, stewarding the direction of the ministry in God-honoring ways. So that's the obvious one, right? But what we're going to point out later as we go along through this is that board members are not wearing that hat all the time, but they're wearing it when they're meeting officially as a board or a subcommittee of the board and doing the board function. So, let's talk about a few things that the governance hat involves.
Well, and the first one is really understanding foundational principles, because most likely, unless we're talking to leaders at a church who are just now establishing the church, like a brand new church plant, except for in that case, there are already foundational principles, there are already foundational documents in place, values, mission, practices. And so the board member's responsibility when they're wearing the governance hat is first and foremost to understand those foundational principles.
Right, because those are the things that legally bind us, and that also not just legally, but missionally, and that create unity, that help us to stay within, on the train track, so to speak, and not go in a ditch. And so things like our statement of faith, things like our philosophy of ministry statement, at our church we call that the Alpine Way. And so that the decisions of the board should be guided all the times by these foundational documents. If the foundational documents don't provide that kind of guidance, they should probably be changed. And so some churches probably need to get going on developing some of the foundational documents, a policy manual and all the rest, that can help the board do their governance well.
Yeah. So Ross, what would you say to the board member who's going through this series right now because they're being considered as a board member for their church, and their church is using this series at Pursue God to kind of help equip somebody? What would you say to the guy who is reading the foundational documents, the philosophy of ministry, the mission statement, the values, and they have some kind of fundamental disagreements with that? What would your advice be to that person about coming on the board or not?
Well, depending on how fundamental those differences are, I'd say that person should decline. That's probably a good way to find out, should I be in governance at this institution? Mm-hmm. And, maybe you feel like, oh, I could change things. On the other hand, you say, well, no, there's a framework in place that I'm going to be required to work within. And that would be integrity, to be willing to work within that framework. So maybe that would be a yellow flag to say, oh, maybe I'm not called to be in governance at this church. Maybe I'm called to serve in some other way.
Yeah, because one of the things I think it's important for board members to understand is what their responsibility is and what it isn't. The goal isn't to have just a bunch of, malcontents. The goal isn't to have a bunch of people who want to change everything. Changes need to be done thoughtfully and prayerfully, and the goal really is to come in and understand what the foundational principles are and to either align yourself with them, probably to decline the position, unless you have an understanding that just the church is just going through some real major transitions, and that's part of the goal.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think one of the things that a board member needs to understand also along with that, those kind of boundaries that are, that there's another boundary. We'll talk about boundaries later, but, you know, kind of within the governance hat, there's a responsibility the governance hat involves, and that's to be engaged in strategy. Governance is, means that, but not necessarily operations. So a lot of boards, especially a lot of maybe smaller churches, spend a lot of time on the details of operational matters. You know, because that's, that feels like a payoff, you know, oh, it's interesting. And you feel like, oh, there's concrete results. If the board is involved in making decisions about particular things, it's, before it feels like it's active, like it's leading. But when a board gets into the weeds operationally, then nobody's taking time to do what the, only the board can do. And that's focus on the big picture, thinking ahead, asking the right questions. Yeah, you want to make sure that somebody's paying attention to the long-term health and direction of the ministry. So we want to really encourage board members that when they wear the governance hat, that it's really not about operations. It's really about strategy and big picture and long-term questions.
So give us an example, Ross, just for our listeners, as they're trying to wrap their mind around the difference between strategy and operations.
Okay, so here's a our board has been dealing with an issue recently. We have property, and we want, and the church is trying to provide a building, a home building for a campus that we planted most recently, and they've been meeting in a rental place. And so it's really easy for the board to want to go through the details of, oh, you know, the floor plan and all the specific things. And now there's people on the board who are involved in that process, but it's tempting to say, oh, let's have this board meeting. We're just going to talk about where the bathrooms ought to be. You know, it's really, but that's really not the board's function. It's the board's function to make sure, oh, let's make sure that we're going about this the right way. Let's make sure that we have the funding that it takes, and we'll provide an authorized funding for the commercial deal that takes place in the to purchase or sell real estate. Let's make sure that you know, all the parts fit in the whole. And so that's an example where sometimes I feel like our board has drifted toward operations. Now, it typically comes in the form of a report, and that's fine. But the board can't say, oh, we want to talk about the details of how this construction is going to be worked out. No, delegate that to people who know what they're doing and people who have the responsibility to make that operational question work. And that's one example.
Yeah, and another example might be along the lines of hiring, right? So let's say, Ross, let's say that the church needs to hire a new youth pastor. What's the board's responsibility in the hiring of a youth pastor, and where would they maybe cross a line into operations?
Yeah, that's a great question. The way we understand it, the board's responsibility, the way we've set it up, and this makes sense in terms of the governance operations approach. We said the board's responsibility is to authorize the position. So there's a youth pastor position that's needed, or there's a second youth pastor that's whatever. The board can authorize that position because the board has a handle on the whole overall finances, the whole overall mission. So the board is asking questions about whether or not adding this position helps our mission, helps our strategy as a whole. The board is not involved in figuring out who that person will be. So actually, that's operational, and that belongs to somebody else. That belongs to, in our set structure, it belongs to the staff to figure out who best meets the qualifications for that position that's been established. And so that's governance, that's not management on the board's part.
Yeah, and let me just remind our listeners that in our particular structure at Alpine Church, at our church, we have the governing board is half of the senior leadership team. The executive team is the other half. So your church might do it a little bit differently. Maybe your senior pastor is the other half of that, or maybe your structure is a little bit different. The goal of this series is to give you the resources and the tools to think about it and then to apply it appropriately to your particular structure. And we're going to include in the show notes, Ross, what we call a prime responsibility chart. And this is really helpful. And again, we encourage our listeners to create your own prime responsibility chart. You know, who has the decision rights when it comes to hiring? What is the board's responsibility? What is the staff's responsibility, or the senior pastors or the executive teams? It's important to think about your structure, your leadership structure, and to have clarity on who has responsibility for what. Because Ross, I think one of the things we've learned is if it's nebulous, then it creates inactivity, it creates confusion, it creates frustration, maybe even some infighting. So I think it's just really important for churches to do what we've had to do in the last several years. And maybe you even have to do this every once in a while, is kind of reevaluate this. Does this make sense? Do we need to make adjustments to this? And so we'll make that prime responsibility chart available to people so that they can create their own chart for their own church. Okay, so that's the governance hat. That's the first hat. The second hat for every governing board member is the volunteer hat. So what do we mean by that, Ross, that a governing board member also is a volunteer?
So that refers to any way that the member of the board is involved in the ministry of the church outside of the board. Now, we feel like that's important for our board members to be involved in some ministry role, to not just be sitting at a distance in the ivory tower, but to be owning and living out our values and our mission as a church. So when that board member is involved in a ministry setting, you know, maybe they're doing mentoring, or they're doing marriage counseling, or maybe they're leading in some kind of a ministry role. They're probably not leading a team, because that's too much weight on their shoulders between board and leading a team. But they might be on a team. They might be a greeter, for example, or make coffee, or whatever it is. That's the volunteer hat. That's separate and distinct from the governance. What we mean by that is, whenever you're a volunteer and you wear that volunteer hat, then you have to leave the governance hat off. You have to leave that back in the boardroom, so to speak. So when you're serving as a volunteer, maybe you're on the worship team, or maybe you're a youth ministry helper, sponsor. In that situation, you never act as a board member. You respect the lines of authority that you're under. You submit to the appropriate staff or the volunteer supervisor who leads that ministry. And so you're not ever exerting governance power. When you're a worship leader, you think, oh, we need new equipment. I'm going to, you know, exert some energy to get that going as a board member. But no, that's not appropriate. And the flip side of that is, when you're wearing the governance hat and you're in a board meeting, then you leave the volunteer hat off. That means you don't bring issues related to the worship ministry or the youth ministry, wherever you serve, you don't bring those into the board meeting. So the board won't be tempted that way to micromanage staff functions and to neglect the larger strategic board functions.
Again, this is one of those conversations to have as a governing board with your leadership team, to really kind of drill down on what this does and doesn't mean. That means that maybe at some point, Ross, you know, a governing board member might represent their volunteer serving area, and somebody else around the table maybe needs to throw a flag at that. Say, wait a second. I think maybe we're overstepping our bounds here. I'm not sure. So I think this is one of those things that needs to be worked out, not just in terms of your volunteer team, but in our case, we're a multi-site church. And so I think we would add into this that governing board members are not there representing their campus in our structure.
Right.
Again, it'd be similar to representing your volunteer ministry. You're not a representative of a particular ministry or even a particular campus in our structure. You're really trying to wear a governing hat as a governing board member, and then your volunteer hat or your campus specific campus hat is a separate thing that you're wearing.
Right. It's helpful to remember these roles, because naturally our inclination is we're going to go to bat for something that we believe in. And so sometimes there's an arm's length relationship there.
Okay, so we've talked about the governance hat, we've talked about the volunteer hat, and there's one other hat that we want to mention, and we're just going to call this the participant hat. This is where you're not a volunteer, you're not serving as a governing board member, you're just an attender. You're an attender of the church. And so what are some examples of this, and how is this a little bit different than the other two hats?
Right, so these are times when you are a board member, maybe you're identified as a board member, you're expected to attend a function as a board member, but those don't have a governance function. You're not going to act as a board member. For example, would be the new members class. So you want to show up and people want to, they want to visit. We want to tell the new members who the board members are, but you're not going to come in there with any kind of authority or any kind of role just other than to be identified. Or there might be the church might have a business meeting, an annual business meeting, and you show up because you're on the board. So it's good for you to be there, but you're not going to have any kind of say or role in there. So, you may or may not be introduced as a board member. But those events are not board meetings or committee meetings, so you don't want to wear the governance hat. You put on the participant hat instead. So it's just a – this is the probably the least of the three hats that the board member is going to probably wear from time to time. It's just knowing where the boundary is in the governance hat.
So, Ross, overall, as people are kind of processing the three hats that they're wearing as a governing board member, I think just the just to put a you know, punctuation mark on the on this section of the episode, the goal then is just to be a positive force, just overall, whether you're whichever hat you're wearing, you want to make the church, you want to make the board a positive experience for everybody. So we're trying to set a positive tone. You're a follower of Jesus. I guess we could have made that a fourth hat. You're a follower of Jesus, but that's, I think, to be. Yeah,
it's kind of on all the time, I hope, you know.
It's on all the time. You're never taking that hat off. And that means that you're just always trying to speak life. You're always trying to have a positive impact where whatever hat you're wearing at whatever point.
Yeah. So part of that is I feel like it's good to nurture your relationships. You know, you're nurturing your relationships with board members so that you have unity and you have camaraderie. It's also, you're growing as a board member in your faith. You're growing individually. So your development in your relationship with Jesus, that's always happening as well. And of course, I think the biggest way to be a positive force in the board and in the church as a whole is to pray. You know, board members ought to be leading the way in prayer. Praying for the pastor, praying for the staff, praying for each other, praying for the decisions and the risks facing the church, praying for the people of the church. So those are all ways to say, hey, we really get this. We're invested in this. And regardless of what hat I'm wearing, what role I have at the same time, I can be that kind of positive person.
Okay, let's finish today, Ross, by talking about four boundaries of a board member. So board members need to understand their boundaries. And the first boundary to understand, and this is a tough one, so some board members might have to really process this. We've even had to kind of process this ourselves, is the fact that as an individual board member, you do not have individual authority. The authority that you have is really more group authority. So Ross, explain what that means, and especially explain what that means to the chairman of the board, because I think for the chairman of the board in particular, you might kind of feel like you're the exception, but you're not.
Yeah, this is honestly, I've been involved with boards in many different capacities for many years, and I think this is the one that I've seen abused most often. And no board member has any individual authority over the staff in a church context, whether that's over the senior pastor, other staff members, other volunteer ministry leaders. In other words, the authority, I don't have any authority individually. I can't go and make, you know, try to help people or influence people to make decisions. It's joint decisions of the board that count. That's where the authority lies jointly in the whole group. And so it might be tempting as a board member to want to have a say in how a particular ministry is run. And somebody might actually even come to me and say, hey, you need to step in and do something about this. But it's entirely inappropriate for a board member to wield influence individually over any ministry leader or staff member to say, hey, I'm on the board. You should do this. You know, that's just, they don't have the authority to do that. Only the group together has authority to make decisions or direction for the life of the church, not individually.
Yeah, and it's what's tricky about that, Ross, is, again, let's speak to the chairman for a second, because that doesn't mean the chairman shouldn't take action. That doesn't mean the chairman shouldn't you know, meet with the senior pastor or the leader, you know, the leadership, even individual board members. I think our current chairman is a great example of this. Yeah. He and I talk more than I talk with the other board members because we're planning agendas together. We're thinking through things like that. But even as he's doing this with me, he's representing the board in general. He's not just trying to push his individual authority or his agenda.
Right. And that's a great point. Now, the board chairman does have authority within the board. So we can say that, make that clear, more than any other board member. Now, we'll talk about every board member has some responsibility within the board to kind of help the board stay on track. But the board chairman is the one who has authority within the board to say, hey, to talk to a board member, say, hey, you know, here's what our covenant says, and I'm not sure you're, you know, living up to that. What can we do? But also the board chairman, that's a great example you gave of liaison with the senior pastor or the senior leader to say, hey, this is, let's talk about how this works. Let's talk about all these issues. How does the board fit into that initiative that you're making, and how can the board give you feedback? And that's really, we'll talk about that some more in the next episode about how the board supports and holds the pastor accountable. So the chairman can often represent the board, but he's not bringing in, you know, his own private ideas. And that's kind of where the next pitfall lies.
Well, before we get to the next one, Ross, what would you say then to the board where, okay, there's an issue here. There's a problem, let's say in particular with the senior pastor. And next week we'll talk about the board's responsibility over the senior pastor. But let's say that there's a problem, because this is, I think, where churches can sometimes run into problems and you see church splits. I mean, it's just an age-old story, right? The power struggle between the board and the pastor or something like that. So what should a board member do if they feel like there's a problem that isn't being addressed? There's a problem that they recognize according to the founding documents, according to their mission statement, whatever. It's, or maybe even a doctrinal issue or a sin issue or something like that, right? So a board member is listening to this episode and they're saying, okay, I don't have any individual authority. So what am I supposed to do then? If I feel like there's a problem that needs to be addressed, do I just keep my mouth shut?
No, that's a great question. Hopefully that doesn't happen all that often, but it does happen. Well, number one is the board member can approach the senior pastor, but only as a private citizen, so to speak, as a brother in Christ. And so if you saw another brother who was, you know, struggling with something, or they had some area where they're maybe question their integrity or whatever it might be, you would go to that person and work it out one-to-one. But you wouldn't have authority in their life necessarily. You have the authority of Scripture, but you wouldn't have any authority. And so a board member can always approach the senior pastor or a staff member on a personal basis, as long as they have an understanding that I'm just coming to you as me. And I'm not coming to you with the board authority, but I want you to think about this question. This is troubling to me, and let's talk about it. That's one thing to do, the personal approach. The second thing to do is then that board member can really take it to the board as a whole, and the board as a whole can decide, is this an issue or not an issue? And if it is an issue, the board as a whole and the board chairman can decide, yeah, we could figure out, let's have a board meeting. We'll ask the senior pastor to excuse himself so that we can figure out what to do, and then we'll bring him in and we'll talk to him about whatever we say the determination that we make is. And so using the board structure as a way of dealing with that issue, the board then can tell that guy, said, no, you're way out of bounds. No, this is not exact. Or the board could say, oh, we weren't aware of that. We need to find out more about that. And so the board as a whole can decide together what to do about those potential issues.
Okay, so that's good. So that's as it relates to the pastor or the staff. What about, Ross, what about if a board member is overstepping his bounds in terms of individual authority? Whose responsibility is it to kind of throw a flag at a board member who's maybe misunderstanding his role on the team?
Yeah, really, it's the responsibility of everyone else on the board, ultimately. Mm. So we call a self-policing board that says the board members are aware. They're trying to say, hey, we want to do our best job we can do. You know, it's not the idea of self-policing, that maybe that's not a great way to say it, because it implies some kind of like negative authoritarian thing. You're busted. But the idea of it means that, hey, we're going to make sure that we're doing the best we can as a group. If somebody steps out of line, and whatever it is, maybe somebody says something in the meeting that is not appropriate, or maybe somebody breaks confidentiality. We'll talk about that in a minute. So we're going to say, oh, what if somebody, the board is like wasting its time and everybody's goofing off or whatever. So that the board members can say, hey guys, as a whole, hey guys, let's be folks, or go to that individual and say, look, what you said in the board meeting, that was not appropriate. And ultimately the chairman of the board has the responsibility to help that happen. But every board member has a opportunity and responsibility to speak to the health and well-being and the proper function of the board when it happens.
And that's why it's so important for everyone on the board to be clear on these things, to be clear on the boundaries, so that just the more clarity you have, the more that you can be self-policing in a healthy way. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's boundary number one, no individual authority, right? You only have authority as a board, not individual authority. Boundary number two, Ross, is not to bring any personal agendas to the table. And this is a hard one because mm-hmm. we're all broken. We all have our own perspective and it's easy to bring your own agenda.
Right. There's always, we all have things that we love and believe in and that are important to us. And so, but as a board member, and this relates to kind of, we talked about the board governance hat, the volunteer hat, this kind of can relate to that, but I might have a personal agenda. I need to leave that outside the door because the goal of the board is to seek the success of the church as a whole. And so, so I don't want to be tempted to use board authority to make my agenda. Whether it's, okay, it could be about social issues, it could be a politics, it could be a theological topic, it could be a preference of ministry or something that I want to see happen in the life of the church, a program that I want to get going or an approach, that I think our church should do. To me, that's a violation of my stewardship as a member of the governing body to say, I'm going to start pressing for those kind of things. And make it, kind of raise that flag and make it something that consumes my energy as a board member.
All right. So no individual authority, boundary number one, no personal agendas, boundary number two. The third boundary, I think boards should spend some time discussing this and really understanding this. And it has to do with confidentiality, that you recognize that what you talk about for the most part around the board table is confidential. How does that work out on a practical level, Ross? And does that mean that husbands, when they come home and their wife asks about stuff, that they just have to say, I can't talk about any of it?
Yeah. Confidentiality is so important. Confidentiality is the preservation of privileged information. It could be information about what's going on in the life of the church. It could be information related to say, oh, yeah, we're thinking in the church, we're thinking about hiring, adding this new thing, this new position. We're thinking about a building purchase or starting a new campus or whatever it might be. All of that is privileged because it might involve timing. It might involve ultimately the success of the venture. But it's also confidentiality about personal situations of church members and even of board members. If I share prayer requests, that's confidential. And I think a lot of our people would understand confidentiality based on, maybe the small group that they're part of. You don't share with everybody in the world the prayer requests that are made in the small group. But with the board, it's more important than that because it can affect the health of the church. And so actually, I don't tell my wife what happened in the board meetings. And she's really good about that. She says, look, I don't need to know. I understand, that, and I said, well, you'll find out in due time, right? when it becomes public, but I can't tell you right now what's going on. And she's good with that. She gets that. There's no pressure there on her part. So if there's whatever said in the board meeting, whatever said in the, once it's in the minutes, then it's a public document. But until then, any non-public information that I'm aware of, I can't disclose that or discuss that with other people who are not authorized to receive it. And that's just really important, because a lack of confidentiality can hurt our reputation as a church. It can hurt our ability to proceed forward on our mission. It can even expose us to legal action. And so that's why it's so important. And we need, every board member needs to understand kind of how it works and why it's important.
Okay, so help us. There's a new board member coming on staff, coming on the team, and it's not just training for him. We're just using him. Your church might have women on your board. In our case, we don't. So when we use that, that's just kind of our perspective on that. So we've got a guy coming on the team, and he's being trained on this boundary number three, confidentiality. What direction, what guidance would you give that guy as far as communicating that in a loving way to his wife, so it doesn't create marital strife or conflict, right? You've got a husband and a wife who love each other, and typically they talk about everything together.
Right, for sure. Right?
And it's healthy for their marriage to talk about everything together, but this is an exception. What guidance would you give the guy who has to explain boundary number three to his wife?
Yeah, I think first of all, he could tell her, look, this is, I would love to tell with you, and I love to share everything with you, but this is one of my duties as a board member, is to maintain confidentiality. It's part of the job description. And so please understand that I just want to be faithful to that. I want to be faithful to this group of individuals who are leading the life of the church. And so, you know, you will know in time. I'm trusting you to trust me with that, you know. And so, actually, what helps with that is that every board member, we ask in our situation to sign a confidentiality policy, to say, there's a covenant that we ask them to sign, and the confidentiality is part of that covenant. And so he could also say, look, they're asking me to sign this covenant, and I want to be faithful to that. In that are a number of things. One of them is confidentiality. And so for me to be on the board, that's just kind of part of what I've agreed to, and that's my integrity is at stake. So that would be how I would approach it, I think.
We'll put a link to that below so that folks can use that. Ross, what would you say to the board member who has slipped up, right? If they're like, oh man, or maybe even they're listening to this and they're saying, oh man, I don't know if I've been as tight-lipped as I should have been, right? What guidance would you give to the board member who's saying that right now?
Yeah, just stop. I think maybe the board member, to make it right, might have to apologize to the person that he shared that information with, maybe to his spouse or someone in their small group, whatever. Say, I'm sorry, guys, I blew it. I said more than I should have said, and I just want to take this responsibility seriously. Now, if the board finds out that one of its members has been doing this, that's room for a conversation. That's the self-policing part of it. And if there's a habit pattern of it, if the person, that conversation takes place and the person continues to slip up with confidentiality, then, you know, maybe it's a character issue, or maybe it's just, it's harmful to the and so it's appropriate in our policy, confidentiality policy, to say it's appropriate for that person to be asked to resign the board, or even action taken to take them off the board. And so that's how seriously I think we want to take it.
Okay, so that's boundary number three. And the final boundary has to do with conflicts of interest. And Ross, we'll include the conflict of interest policy, the statement that we have our board members sign every single year. We'll include that in the show notes. But talk us through what this means. What is a conflict of interest? And maybe even give a couple of examples.
Yeah, so this gets a little bit complicated. You know, it can be. A conflict of interest means that there's a member of the board, and the board is making a decision about some matter that might benefit the private interest of one of the board members or a staff member, or it might result in a possible transaction where someone receives an excess benefit. And so there's some language in the law that describes all that. But we're saying, okay, how does the board do its business with integrity so that individual members of the board don't like make out because of the decisions that the board has made? And so now the fact is that conflicts of interest occur all the time, but the board, we want the board to be aware of them. And sometimes when a person is in a position to potentially, there's a private interest of a board member in a decision that's made by the board, that's not inappropriate for that decision to be made. But the conflict of interest has to be surfaced, put on the table in advance, and then the board can decide whether there's some kind of benefit, an additional excess benefit, or whether there's something inappropriate about that transaction. So one example, a recent example that we've had to deal with, we deal with several, but I'll give a couple of the quick one is we have a member of the board. The staff asked the board to create a new position in our church to handle some stuff, you know, practical stuff at each of our campuses. And one of the people that was envisioned for being part of that position was a daughter of a board member. Now, the process was we could have created that position as a board, and that would have been fine, no conflict of interest necessary, but we knew in advance that this daughter was in, you know, it was partly created around her skills and her ability, and the campus she was at needed her and so forth. And so that created potentially, because of the way we did it, it created a conflict of interest for that board member to vote for something that would benefit his daughter. And so we just, as a board, we said, let's just talk about that. Let's just see, is there somebody else who's better? Is there, is this an excess benefit for this family, for the daughter? And so ultimately, then we just said, we're going to proceed on this, but maybe that board member is excused from making a vote on that.
In that particular example, in our structure, yeah, we had to work through that, right, Ross? Because in our structure, that's at a certain level, that's an operational decision. And we just said that the board isn't supposed to be involved in operations, but because the position wasn't created yet, right? The board has no vote on who gets to be hired. That's the executive team's role. But because the position hadn't been created, the decision rights for creating position, again, the executive team would recommend a new position to be created in our structure, but the governing board would have to approve the position. And that's right. When we got into an issue where we realized, uh-oh, we might have a conflict of interest here. Now, again, in our case, I think it would have been really detrimental to the church if we would have just said, oh, because there's a potential conflict of interest, we're not going to create the position or we're not going to hire the person, because she clearly was the right person for the role. Right. So for the benefit of the church, we just needed to make sure that we went through the proper procedures so that down the road, we couldn't be accused of doing anything untoward.
Right. And exactly, that's a great point, because the whole conflict of interest approach, the whole procedure, it doesn't mean that that person can't have that job.
Right.
It only means that as a board, we're responsible about deciding, does that create some kind of an excess benefit? If that's the best person for the job and we're not like paying them like three times what we're paying everybody else, there's no then the conflict of interest, there is a conflict of interest, but it's not relevant. It doesn't rise to the level of having to take action. And so, so we think of conflict of interest, we oftentimes think it means only the negative side of that. No, the conflict of interest is neutral and it's a real thing, but the question is it relevant or not? So for example, then the other example I would give you is we've been working on some real estate action, trying to find a campus for a home for one of our campuses. And we have a guy who's on the board who happens to be a commercial realtor. And so we're asking him to help lead the way, because he's really good at what he does, to help lead the way on making these transactions. So there was that's a conflict of interest, because he's in the board position and he can vote on, you know, aspects of this whole deal, but he's also the realtor. And so there's a commission that he makes and so forth. So we said, okay, let's put this all on the table. Let's examine it, evaluate it. The question is not whether or not he's a realtor who's on the board. The question is whether or not this role is going to give him some kind of advantage or some kind of special interest where he's going to receive excess benefit. And so the fact we decided, no, it doesn't, because number one, he's the best. We could find somebody else who is better than him. And number two, he's not making extra money off it. he's making, and I think, I don't know, I think, I don't know what his heart is, but he's probably donating commissions to the church. But the fact is that he's not making excess benefit. And so we were safe. It was safe, and it didn't violate anything for us to use him in that role, because we evaluated it. We said, we know what the issues are. We know where the boundaries are. Here's the things that we would look for. And none of those things that would be a problem were being violated in that situation.
Okay. So those are the four boundaries of a board member. No individual authority, boundary number one. No personal agendas, boundary number two. The confidentiality situation, which is so important, boundary number three. And then no conflicts of interest, which was boundary number four. Now, Ross, again, so much of what we talked about today, I think leadership teams at churches are going to want to really process that, talk about it amongst themselves, take a look at some of the resources that we'll include in the show notes below. We encourage churches to create your own resources, to create your own prime responsibility chart. Figure that stuff out for your church, for yourself and for your church, and make sure that you've got clarity on this, so that as you move forward, everyone's on the same page with the key responsibilities of individual board members. And again, if you check out our training resource at pursuegod.org at the training page, you can find discussion questions to help your board member to have these conversations. And then join us next time, because in lesson number three, we'll talk about the board member's responsibility as it relates to the senior pastor. So join us next time for that conversation. Hey, listeners, this is Brian Dwyer reminding you to rate this show on your favorite podcast app. That really does help us when you do that. That way more people can discover this podcast and start listening. And also, don't forget to share the podcast with a friend.